founding director of Care of Creation and a fellow of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. And Ed will be talking about creation care as a gospel issue. So please join me in welcoming Ed Brown.
Thank you. It's good to be here and good to see so many people here for a couple of reasons. One is so the organizers know to give us a bigger room next year. But also for a personal reason, I am here with some health issues. My wife is not real happy that I came. And what she said to me last night and again this morning was, there better be more than two people in the room or you're never going again. So not nice to see very, very old faces here and some new. And I have a confession to make at the very beginning. And that is the abstract in the program, you can ignore that, except for the title. The title is the same. The conclusion is pretty much the same. But I wrote the abstract wrote it for last year's conference that I wasn't able to attend. And Janelle said, oh, just send the same one in again. They accepted the last one. So, but I also feel some freedom to depart from what I said I was going to say. Because of my relative age compared to some in the room and a lot of people in the general field of creation care. As of next April, I will be marking 25 years in the field of creation care. I will also be marking my 50th graduation from Gordon College as an English major. Try to make sense of that. We don't have time to go through it. But beyond that, I can claim something that even none of my colleagues at the Nelson Institute of Environmental Studies can claim, and that is that my first environmental talk was 54 years ago. I was a sophomore in high school. It was the very first Earth Day. Now, how many of you here attended the first Earth Day someplace and gave talks? Okay, I've got a colleague there, so that's also the Nelson Institute is named after Gaylord Nelson, the guy who founded Earth Day, and one of my good friends these days is Tia Nelson, who is his sister. So, his daughter, excuse me. That's any mistakes I made we're going to blame on brain fog. Okay, so as I'm thinking over the last 25 years of working in creation care, my personal goal, as many of you will know from hearing my talks, has been mobilizing the church to care for God's creation. And we'd have to say over the last 25 years, and those who were attending the all-day consultation yesterday would probably dealt with this, mobilizing the church in the U.S. has not been a grand success over the last quarter century. Now, it's not true all over the world. In places like the U.K., they have a program called EcoChurch, that now over 4 or 5 years has 4,000 to 5,000 churches involved in various aspects of mobilizing their own congregations, but not here in the U.S. And so I've started to think back over my own efforts and the efforts of the movement as a whole and to ask, were there some mistakes that we might have made? Now, this is my personal observation. There's no academic study behind it, so take it for what it's worth. I think, real quickly, we've focused on the wrong topic, that is climate change. Now, I'm not minimizing climate change at all, but biodiversity, loss of pollinators, so many other different aspects of the environmental crisis are just as critical as climate change. I've wondered often why the framework from the Stockholm Institute on planetary boundaries has not been accepted as a more broadly based expression of what our problems are. Climate change is like one system out of the many systems that make our car run. You know, let's say climate change appropriately is the radiator and the water pump and the thermostat. If we overheat, the engine's gonna die. But we also need an electrical system for the spark. We need a fuel system. And the planetary boundaries will show you that every one of those systems is going into the red. It does no good at all simply to talk about the radiator and the water pump and so on. Because of that, focusing on climate change, we've been led, not necessarily intentionally, into using language that the church doesn't understand or reacts allergically to, political language. Climate change is almost by definition a political problem because it's on the level of governments. We can do all we want as individuals, but until the governments get together and decide to do something, it's going to be hard to move forward. And so we use language like calling our congressmen, voting for correct policies, and so on. And these have, and at times, somewhat negative effect on certain parts of the church family, particularly in the U.S., for reasons we don't have time to go into. And I think this has also led to us focusing on the wrong target, that is individuals, rather than the church itself. And that's really the springboard to where I want to go here. My first 5 years in the Creation Care Movement was at Ausable Institute. Cal DeWitt rescued me from InterVarsity. He hired me in the spring of 2000 because he needed a manager. Can I pause? Could someone find me some water to drink? I'm suddenly very dry up here. Thanks, Lowell. I spent 5 years at Ausable. Cal hired me because I was a manager, not because I knew much about environment, even though I still have that early talk at at Earth Day on my resume buried somewhere deep. After 5 years, as I looked back at that time and as I prepared for what God had for me next, what I learned from you natural scientists, let's do another hand raise. Who here is natural science? Yeah, you're not my buddies. I was a pastor before, I didn't understand, but now I do, and have done for many years. What I learned from you guys, God's creation is in serious trouble and much more serious than I knew at the time. Now, this 2000, this is before climate change has really hit the media. It's a little bit before Al Gore and so on. But you guys knew what was happening. And at Ausable, they were teaching what was happening. And I started to absorb this sense of alarm and things are not going in the right direction and we got to do something. I came to the second conclusion, and that was, now as a preacher, I tend to think in analogies. I thought of God's creation like a human person or body that's sick, okay? The scientists are like the doctors. You guys are able to diagnose many of the diseases. You're even able to offer some possible therapies or solutions. But like, thank you so much. We might make it through. Ah, water for a thirsty man. Now, you can take that analogy anywhere you like it with the topic we're dealing with. If God's creation is a sick person, been diagnosed by the scientists, some therapies offered by the scientists, the doctor doesn't go home with you. I have a number of conditions that come partly from genetics, partly from just being a little bit older. I'm diabetic, for example. And my diabetic doctor would love to come home with me and sit there at the table and say, no, you shouldn't eat that one. No, you shouldn't eat that one. That one's okay. When are you going to exercise? But he can't do that. Some of us would say, thank goodness he can't do that. But the analogy here is that the scientists can't change society. And you guys know that. And some of you are very frustrated and even at times depressed because of it. Because you can see the patient is dying, and you know the information is there, but what can be done? So that led me to conclude, by the time I was leaving Ausable, that the solution is not with you guys, you've done your job. The solution is with the rest of the society, teachers, business leaders, political leaders, but in particular, with the church. And my first book was Our Father's World, first published in 2006 and still available on Amazon in updated editions. This is a quote from this is like the thesis paragraph of that book. The environmental crisis is a scientific problem, an economic problem, a political problem, a security problem, a moral problem, and a matter of life and death for millions. But at its root, the environmental crisis is a spiritual problem. The church, properly understood and functioning in the full power of God, is the only institution or organization available to the human race that can address a problem with this many dimensions. This is sort of what led me to start Care of Creation, and with the goal that has stayed with me ever since, to mobilize the church to care for God's creation. There are lots of reasons why the church is an appropriate institution for that that we don't have time to get into. Now, what happened then shortly after we started Care of Creation was I became connected with the Lausanne movement. I attended the big Cape Town meeting in 2010, the Cape Town Commitment, which was the concluding document of that conference, produced some dramatically important stuff about creation care. If Jesus is Lord of all the earth, we cannot separate our relationship to Christ from how we act in relation to the earth. To proclaim the gospel that says Jesus is Lord is to proclaim the gospel that includes the earth, since Christ's lordship is over all creation. Creation care is thus a gospel issue within the lordship of Christ. So what I want to do with the rest of my time, and this is an ideal situation because the speaker can't see the clock.
8 minutes.
Oh, perfect, we're halfway through. So I'd like to just explore this concept of creation care as a gospel issue. Now, the paper that I was going to deliver last year actually was published in EMQ in the spring of 2023. And if you like the abstract and the program, that paper is available online at EMQ. So, or I could send you a copy. What it did was it explored the origin of the phrase and how it goes back to the early integral mission movement, which was also connected with the very start of Lausanne as a network. So the question is, how does focusing on creation care as a gospel help us, as a gospel issue, help us to get back on track? And my first suggestion would be that it changes how we define the gospel. It requires that we think of the gospel as something holistic. Now, that was the genius of the integral mission movement that came out of Latin America, was that the gospel is not just John 3:16. It's not just get saved and be baptized and then go to heaven. That the gospel required us to address things like poverty and justice and so on. And in some contexts, creation care came into it, but not that much back then because it wasn't as obvious an issue. What I'd like to suggest is that we sort of reason backwards. You remember the song, "His eye is on the sparrow. I know he watches me." Now that comes from Jesus saying, as part of a parable, I think, you know that your Father cares for every sparrow that falls to the ground. How much more value are you than a whole bunch of sparrows? What's interesting in Jesus' logic, he doesn't say, you know how much God cares for you, thus he cares for all the sparrows. He flips it, see? And so what I'm going to suggest with this passage that shouldn't be too much of a surprise to those of you who know me, for in him, this is Colossians 1:15-20, in him, Jesus, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things. In him, all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross." 5 minutes already? Oh my goodness. Okay. You talk to any typical Christian, blood shed on cross, you're talking human salvation. That is not what Paul is talking about here. He's talking about the redemption, the reconciliation of the entire cosmos to God. So what I'm suggesting is that if we use Jesus' logic with the sparrow, and we use this as our point of certainty and say, because the gospel applies to the entire cosmos, it therefore must apply to situations of justice and poverty and abuse and all the other things, and therefore it must also apply to us as individuals, because how much more worth are we? You see, it forces us to take the holistic view of the gospel. There's no option to start with John 3:16 and stop short. So that's my initial point under creation care as a gospel issue. The second is this, I'll just hit on it real quickly. The gospel is relational. You all know this phrase from the prophet John Muir, who also had connections to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, just to drop a name here and there. When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything in the universe. Now, I started thinking about theology and ecology. Theology with the Trinity and the Church is a whole study of relationships. Ecology is the science of relationships. These two networks of relationships overlap in terms of God created it all. There's spiritual relationships of theology, the physical relationships of ecology. So we should be thinking about theological ecology and ecological theology. And I'll just leave you to ponder that. Okay, so creation care as a gospel issue changes how we define the gospel. It also gives us being us in this room, us who are convinced that creation care is an important topic, that bad things are coming down the pike and so on. It gives us as a movement and anyone involved as a Christian in the natural sciences with a new focus, a topic that includes the entire cosmos. We're not just talking about something narrow like climate change, as horrific as that is, because I know it's not narrow, it's going to affect everything. It gives us a language that the church understands. We're now talking gospel language. What I used to do when I had weekend seminars, Friday night, Saturday morning at a church, Friday night would all be Bible, why God made the world. Romans 8, how much God loves the world. How the Colossians 1, the fact that Jesus died for the cosmos. Then you send them home to sleep. Okay, they're thinking about Romans 8. No one ever argued with Romans 8. And then you come back the next day and you talk about climate change and biodiversity and so on. Now we've got a faith context for it. Well, of course the world is falling apart because of our sin. And the solution is not just technological, but it's spiritual. And most important of all, I think, it gives us a central role for the church that I don't have time to get into. But I want you to look back sometime at Colossians 1, 15 to 20. The first part is about Jesus as Lord, or Jesus as Creator. The second part is Jesus as Reconciler. And right in between, and he is the head of the church, his body. Why did Paul put that phrase in there? It doesn't seem to fit. Unless God or the church is the hinge that connects those two. So let me end with back to the Cape Town commitment with this paragraph that I think gives us one of the best comprehensive definitions. They use integral mission, but we could say the mission of the church, God's mission in creation. We could even say this approach is a definition of what the gospel ought to be, okay? Integral mission means discerning, proclaiming, and living out the biblical truth that the gospel is God's good news through the cross and resurrection of Jesus Christ for individual persons, that's evangelism, for society, that's injustice and all the other things that come with it, and for creation, that's creation care, natural sciences, and all the rest of it. All of these three are broken and suffering because of sin. All three are included in the redeeming love and mission of God. All three must be part of the comprehensive mission of God's people. Thank you very much.
Okay, we should have time for a couple questions.
Thanks, Ed. I think what I'm struggling with is, so belonging, for instance, to a denomination that really has come out of a reaction to the old social gospel.
Yeah.
You start talking about another gospel, that immediately triggers in people's minds, you know, Galatians passage about another gospel, and they just see, they, you know, you can make a case all day of how biblical this is, and I believe it is, but they just hear, no, this is just Marxism, this is just, you know, something like that. So how do you, yeah, is putting this in gospel terms actually more of an impediment to the American church, or at least some segments of it, than a help? I don't know.
I hear what you're saying. Your problem is identical to the Southern Louisiana.
Yeah.
You know, people working in the oil industry, you know, they don't have an option to move to another job. And besides, every week I pull up to the gas pump and fill my car with their product. Where's the hypocrisy in that, you know? So it's not an easy question. But I think in my own experience, I said it tongue in cheek, but I think it's serious that no one ever argued with Romans 8. You know, and in some ways, they don't realize this is not a new gospel. This is a full gospel. Well, this is a whole gospel. it could be a full gospel, except the denomination has already grabbed that one. But so I think it needs to be handled gently with a lot of prayer. But I am a firm believer in the power of Scripture to get hold of people that have given their lives to Scripture. And they'll say, I never thought of it that way. So, yeah. Yeah, did you all hear that? I think there's probably two sides to that. You know, on the one hand, as a pastor of a small local congregation, and most churches are small, and you know, I was pastor of one, I'm very much bounded by the circumstances of my people, and that's why I think we need to be careful of putting the entire burden of climate change on someone who's only trying to pay his bills. But on the other hand, if the church is truly mobilized, there are people in churches who are sitting in boardrooms who are able to speak to those issues. Probably not in my tiny church, but in some church somewhere. And if a pastor is preaching the word faithfully, those people might just stand up or speak up in their boardroom and something might happen.
I
hope so.
that the gospel area of this involves individuals and then it involves the whole cosmos. And I wonder if you could speak to another area, which is there is an entire world of people concerned about climate change and environmental degradation of all types who aren't coming to Christ because the church is not meeting them and serving them. And until it speaks a relevant voice, they are a mission field we have withdrawn ourselves from.
You're absolutely right. And I have said more than once to pastors or groups of church leaders that in not accepting or not taking a appropriate position on these issues. I'm not a politician, I'm not used to parsing my words, but that we're missing one of the greatest opportunities for evangelism. And I think it was in one of my books that I used an example of just going out and joining, not doing your own cleanup, but joining a community cleanup. And getting shoulder to shoulder with other people who care about this. Because here's the thing, they care about what God cares about. They may not even believe that God exists, but they care about something he cares about. They've got one foot in the kingdom already. And it shouldn't take too much to pull them over, depending on how much resistance has already been created. But that again is a matter for prayer. So thank you all so much.